So, okay, we will now hear Professor Sherman, and he will talk about the police. In my view, there was at least one clear positive effect of the riots, because the police associations in this country became more united at this time. They were fighting with each other before, but we will learn more from Professor Sherman.
Thank you, Friedrich. I'd like to build on Dr. Crew's comments, especially with respect to this idea of the suspension of the normal social order, the carnival effect, because I would hope in 10 minutes to give you enough evidence from enough different kinds of research, kinds of settings, to support the claim that the riots were a predictable result of an iron law of policing. That law being tested in a way that the man who invented the word scientist, William Buell, the master of Trinity College, Cambridge, described as consilience, that is, using evidence from one class of facts to predict things that happen in another class of facts. And as you can see here, I'm drawing on not only the Gordon riots of 1780, but also some experiments that have been done in Atlanta involving the policing of monkeys by monkeys. So let me just summarize this notion that the London riots of August 2011 were an example of a knockout experiment in policing. The definition of knockout experiments in science is an abrupt removal of an element. It was developed for genetics to see what happens when genes are disabled and to infer causal effects on functions and traits, including propensity for diseases. The theory that I suggest specifically, that knockout tests I think demonstrate, is the abrupt removal, not of police per se, but of a normal ratio. And that's a more specific way of saying what Dr. Crew said about the disruption of the social order. The normal ratio of policing to offending, and if that ratio is suddenly removed, chaos results. The previous cases that are all consistent with this hypothesis are a number of famous very large gatherings that went bad in this country, police strikes in a variety of countries, the power failures in Manhattan in particular, the experiments with the monkeys in Atlanta, and finally data from a large desistance study in the United States that shows within offenders and not just across social situations the same pattern overall. That pattern is this notion of a swamping effect, a tipping point in which the change in the ratio gets to a point where people perceive that the normal order is suspended. And this can happen in two ways. One is that all of a sudden there are a lot fewer police around, but the ratio can also be changed by all of a sudden having a lot more crimes. And in a way, the London riots were demonstration that we're all sort of depending on the absence of an impulse for thousands of people to come together and challenge the social order all at once. I think it is the awareness of that throughout the course of history that has a lot to do with certain principles in various countries. But to put a more mathematical point on this, I would like to claim that the tipping point occurs somewhere around 4 or 5 to 1. That is, if there are more than 4 or 5 policeable acts that are occurring without with only one police person or police response that is possible, that's when the swamping occurs. Arguably, it occurred in the most influential riot in the history of Britain, which some historians attribute the cause of creating Scotland Yard, and finally in 1829, to the lingering discussion of over 50 years of the Gordon riots. What happened in that situation was that Lord Gordon, who was not very friendly to Roman Catholics, objected to allowing Roman Catholics to be hired in the army without making the pledge and to go fight Americans in Massachusetts and Virginia. So 40,000 to 60,000 people who didn't like Catholics marched on Parliament. The Prime Minister, this sounds familiar, he forgot to call the constables, and all of a sudden all hell broke loose. Lords were being pulled out of their carriages. and attacked on their way into the House of Lords. And for 5 days, all hell broke loose in London. Finally, they called out the army, which echoes of Damascus immediately shot 285 people dead, 200 more wounded, and the riots were over. Lord Gordon was tried for inciting riot. He was found not guilty. The Lord Mayor was fined £1,000 for failing to read the Riot Act before they started to shoot. So even then, we had some respect for the rule of law in this country. 100 years later, in Trafalgar Square, during a very long recession, it's not nice to think they had a 25-year economic disaster in this country around that time, but with 563 police standing by, 5,000 demonstrators, a nice 10-to-1 ratio, showed up in Trafalgar Square, and then all the police said, better protect the Queen, so they went to Buckingham Palace, leaving Pall Mall and St. James unpoliced. The crowd left Trafalgar Square, started smashing all of the club windows where all of the gentlemen were sitting and having glass flying over their port and cigars. While they were charging up Oxford Street, the crowd suddenly encountered the intrepid Inspector James Cuthbert, who, with a sergeant and 15 PCs, charged with their batons lifted down Oxford Street, scared the hell out of the 5,000 demonstrators who ran away. And to this day, that is the practice used with lathi charges using bamboo sticks in India. A remarkably effective demonstration of the tipping point, that it doesn't take much to intimidate the many, but it's got to be organized and it's got to be credible. Well, how about if you remove the police altogether? In 1919, this happened in both Boston and Liverpool. It happened for one day in Montreal in 1969 and for 2 weeks in Helsinki in 1976. There are other examples. These are the most famous. What happened in Boston, interestingly, is not just looting and armed robbery, which also happened in Liverpool in the same summer, but there was also widespread rapes in Boston, suggesting perhaps that Americans are much worse than Brits when it comes to these things. In Montreal, a slight increase in burglaries of 1,300%, bank robberies up 5,000%, and looting by, this sounds familiar, ordinary, disciplined, peaceful citizens until the police finally came back to work. In Helsinki, in the midst of a very cold snap in a very cold city, 86% of the police went on strike, thus disrupting the social order by a ratio of about 7-to-1. 1/7 of the normal police were left out. During that period, there was a 50% increase in store robberies, 42% increase in violent injuries treated at the accident emergency rooms. With systematic observations going on near the train station before and during this, to provide yet another source of data that there was, in fact, this massive increase in crime, not in summer weather, but with the disruption of the social order. In the summer weather in New York City in 1977, in the middle of the night, the power went out in a brutal heat wave. 1,600 stores got looted, 1,000 of them were set on fire, 500 police or more were injured, and 4,500 looters were arrested. Strikingly, in 1965, when the power went out during the daytime in much colder weather, and again in 2003 in August, very hot weather, but those power failures occurred in daylight. People could stay with their stores and protect them. Didn't seem to help much last summer in London, but it does help us to understand why there was such a massive disruption of the social order in 1977. Having lived in New York at that time, I can tell you that the city was generally out of control, even without the power failing. And that wasn't true by 2003, and it wasn't true in 1965 either. So it says something also about the larger social context that may be a part of this iron law of policing that I'm claiming. But perhaps the best evidence that this is a biosocial trait that is found amongst all of us primates, and these are our cousins, the macaque pigtail monkeys living at the Yerkes Animal Observatory, Primate Observatory, Emory University. Franz de Waal, a very brilliant scientist, has so many interesting things about reconciliation and conflict management in these observations. In this particular experiment, 82 monkeys who were policed normally by 3 high-status males and 1 high-status female, who did most of the conflict management. Because of complex hierarchy issues among the females, he just removed the 3 males, creating a disruption in the normal ratio. This is very interesting in terms of how many police we need. They normally had 1 police monkey for every 19 citizen monkeys in this particular troop in in Atlanta. And the knockout experiment was to take the three alpha males out of the general area in the upper graph and into this area behind windows where all the other monkeys could see them but also knew they couldn't get at them. So to go back to the picture, you see the glass. That's where the cops were being locked up, and all of the other monkeys got to do what? Well, the observations based on 156 control hours, where everything was normal, and the 78 knockout hours, where the police monkeys were removed, occurring between 11 a.m. and 8 p.m., up to 8 hours a day over 20 weeks. What did the data show? When the police were knocked out, significantly increased levels of aggression at the individual level, the intensity of aggression when it occurred, much higher rates of biting, which of course is a good way to kill another monkey, much more ganging up on people. The proportion of interventions that were joined by others who came in and just kept bullying the monkey who was being attacked went way up. And so the authors suggest in this piece in the Proceedings of the Royal Society that conflict spread more rapidly with higher infectivity in the conflict manager's absence. There was also, interesting, less restorative justice after the conflicts, which is a very widespread pattern the monkeys use, generally by pulling lice out of each other's fur. I recommend this to you highly, especially maybe in corrections. Now, criminology has a tipping point. Studying tipping points, as Tittle and Rowe did in 1974, looking across counties in Florida, found, again, this evidence of a 3-to-1, 4-to-1. There was no deterrent effect of the ratio of arrests to crimes below 0.3 arrests per crime. But once you got above 0.3 arrests per crime, the more arrests per crime, the less crime there was. This finding was replicated in 1978 by Brown across California, at least in part. In Pennsylvania, Chamlin found, again, a 0.3 to 0.4. And so is there this sort of biosocial dynamic in any primate community sensing that there are too few policers, as Duvall calls the monkeys? Will that failure to provide enough policing create a knockout effect? And is that what we're reversing when we put lots of police into hotspots or when we have sufficient police for demonstrations? I think it can help us build a science around this key research question of how many police we need, where and when, and what that ratio of policeable acts to police responding should be. But what about within individuals? Well, the Pathways to Desistance study, funded by the MacArthur Foundation, has been following 1,354 young people in Philadelphia and Phoenix. They have 6 data points through surveys, very high response rate in this panel, 6 months apart. And the perceived risk at time 1 was then related to the self-reported time crime at time 2 in the analysis by Tom Loughran at the University of Maryland with Ray Paternoster and Alex Baccaro. And what they found was that the prevalence of self-reported offending smoothed to the perceived risk started to drop substantially once you hit 3 or 4 0.3 or 0.4 as the probability of getting caught, the probability of an arrest in relation to committing the offense. And the higher they thought the probability of arrest was above that level, the more you can see that the likelihood of their committing any self-reported crime during that period became. So between individual level studies of juvenile delinquents in the United States and area level studies of police at the city level on strikes, this wide range of evidence, I think, gives us the opportunity to ask, isn't it pretty implausible that we would have such consistent findings about this ratio in so many different settings? It may not be an iron law of policing, but perhaps it's at least solid oak. Thank you very much.
For those who are not yet very familiar with criminology, see how broad the range of theories is, from evolutionary animal biological approaches to consumer and consumer orientation. China knows very well how many police are needed. But then we have another question to ask. We will not discuss it today.